Everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how's it been going these last 2 weeks?
I'm feeling like shit, man. My head's killing me. It's like new medication. It's like, man.
I thought you were going to say new students.
Yeah, we got a few of those, thank goodness.
Well, I hope everything kind of turns around here and you feel a little better because you got a big show coming up on Saturday, a Future Shock coming from the FSW Arena at 5 p.m. local time. And again, you can see it on Trailer TV if you're not in town. I guess the big news on this one is that this young man is going to issue a open championship challenge for the Future Legends belt, anyone under the age of 25 or younger, right?
Yes.
So is there a huge line, or is there just, are the kids just dumb enough not to?
Yeah, we've been getting, people who don't work for FSW are smart enough to try to reach out in that situation, but we're really looking for some of our younger wrestlers to have an opportunity. I know Demir and Davion really were excited to hear about that, but they have their own match. So that was already announced first. So, you know, maybe the winner could take on the winner of the open challenge because, you know, Davion and Demir are also about 20 years old. So, you know, they got a big match to settle some stuff. The Killer D's, obviously, they've imploded. And Demir is looking to get a little revenge from Davion.
Whose fault was it in your eyes?
In my eyes, I'll be honest, I'll say it was Davion's fault because, you know, as much as those guys wanted to be put together, there became a time frame that Davion had other issues going on and wasn't really dedicated to the wrestling, which kind of made Demir have to sit on the sidelines. And but the thing is, Davion's the one who kind of snapped on Demir. So I think all the blame has to go to Davion. Demir was being a good soldier. You know, we would communicate and like, hey, if you need me, and it's like, well, it's a little tougher. You know, you're in the tag team and now just to give somebody, give you a random match. And I didn't try to punish him. I tried to get him some work, you know, in there. And there became a 4 to 6 month time frame, which when you're a young tag team and you can't get on shows for 4 to 6 months, and they're also not in the upper echelon. They're a team that when they get that opportunity, they need to take it. And it's like, hey, I got a match for you. Oh yeah, I got this going on. Oh, I got this going on. And it's like, well, for somebody who says I want to be a wrestler, so I had problems with Davion in that situation. Like, you're asking for things, but the days that we do have shows, you're not able to make them.
Right.
But then there's something special going on. Like, I remember the Silver Knights were doing the game, and I'm trying to figure out what we're doing with Bodhi. Because they liked him from the last one. He was like, oh, man, me and Bodhi will kill it, man. Give me that match. And I'm like, dude, you're like the last guy who's going to get that match. Like, you're not able – you weren't able to make the last show, and you're not making the next show, but you want me to have you jump over Ice and Vandegrift, who got that match with Bodhi in the triple threat? Like,
right.
Take a step back, and it got kind of heated, to be honest with you, because it was like – are you this fucking delusional, bro? You know, you're not getting an opportunity when you can't be there and you're low guy on the totem pole. So you have to make yourself available to me. You're not available to me, but Ice Williams is and Matt Vandegrift is all the time. And now there's a big special moment where people get to perform in front of a few thousand hockey fans.
Yeah.
And you want me to give it to you? That's disrespectful to anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and
in the old days too, you know that the veteran who, if the word got back to him that that kid had even asked that, the veteran would probably show up at a training session and make sure that the kid understood why they were not getting the opportunity.
You know, and it's just like, to me, it's common sense. And it's like, you know, on the other end, yeah, he's there to help. And he was, you know, one of 7 people out of 30 that helped set up the ring for the show and all the other stuff. So he wasn't like, okay, well, I'm not getting the match. Fuck you. I'm not going to help. Right. So I'll give him the credit on that end for doing it. But the fact of the matter is, it's the body of work.
Yeah.
And that includes being around to help. And are you there to help? Yeah. Yeah. And again, there's good things all the time. But, you know, to me, being there for setup, that's what you're supposed to do. Yeah. So it isn't like you get a extra credit for showing up to help.
Right. Yeah.
But it's unfortunate because there's a bunch of people who do not help. Right. So how do you balance that? But you can't balance it when it comes to, you know, top name guys like my former heavyweight champion and a guy who's held numerous belts in the company. My job is to try to provide them the best matches we can, because, you know, it was a Cinco de Mayo type thing. It was Mexican independence, whichever day it was. And we had like the first match had some lucha stuff, and this one wasn't lucha stuff, but it was the best match we can present to people that are not aware of who we are. Putting Ice Williams, Matt Vandegrift, and Bodhi in a match is going to get us more publicity, no offense, than Davion versus Bodhi.
Yeah.
And those guys knocked it out of the park, you know. And, you know, time has now passed, and you know, and it seems like he's around more, obviously. We saw the implosion happen over, you know, a few different events. Even the last event, Demir wrestle the match, and Davion didn't, but Davion still decided to get involved in that one and cost Demir the possibility of winning a singles match. So, you know, they're going to settle it at Future Shock.
Who else are we looking forward to seeing on Future Shock?
C4, who is military guy from the Air Force Base. He's had a couple of matches.
Yep.
He's going to get an opportunity and taking on a crafty veteran. No Ricky Tenacious, so Brandon G. Greatness gets to have a singles match. We have Olivia Vegas, who moved from Oklahoma to be part of FSW, and she's going to get an opportunity. Newcomer making her debut, Fallon Gray out of Tucson.
He's good. She's okay, really good.
There you go. So Chris Bay hit me up and said, hey, when's the next Future Shock? I said, hey, May 17th. He said, I got somebody that if you could put on, if you need some footage. I'm like, Chris, if you tell me she's good enough, I'm not going to go look at a match. So she hit me up. I explained to her how things work. Student showcase. You want an opportunity. It's there for you. Chris said, hey, if you can get a spot, and I got a spot. So she's going to be at the show.
That's great. Yeah.
So, you know, again, always trying to incorporate some new talent. A lot of stuff going on in Arizona. So a lot of the normal Future Shock crew, the Freddie Cordovas and the Enrique Calderones, and a lot of those younger cats, they're not going to be there. So it's really a focus of strictly FSW students. You know, I'm looking at the list here. You know, you got Bodie, and you got the Demir and Davion. We got the women's match. Warren Moore is taking on Con Osborne. So these are two guys out of the FSW facility.
Yeah.
The Asylum, who's had some good success lately, they're taking on a new tag team. Remy created the name for them, the Royal Daddies, Johnny Royal and Daddy Daniel Ismael, are going to get their first opportunity as a tag team. I'll tell you what, there's not going to be any more energy than the Royal Daddies, brother.
Wait, just can you just tell me, how excited was Remy when he came up with that name and pitched it to you?
Well, I don't know if he was excited, but when I posted the Royal Daddies, I don't know. I haven't talked to him since. Like, I saw the name, and I'm like, okay, that's how I'm going to be because I'm the ring announcer. I will be introducing them as the Royal Daddies. Usually, I'm the connoisseur of coming up with tag team names. Right. You know?
Oh, man.
And then we have one more debut, Jaden Cole, one of our new students. He went into the Gabe Sapolsky seminar without having a match with another guy, Jazz, who hurt his shoulder, but they had a really good match for two guys who never had a match before. And Gabe was kind of like, oh, I really don't critique people who've never had a match before, but I'm going to tell you right now that it was pretty good. So that kind of earned him a spot, and he gets the de facto Future Shock guy, which is 1A is Gregory Sharp and 1B is Watson. So yep. Watson will take Jaden Cole on the drive, you know, on the test drive. So,
yeah, no, that's, and I think that's, you know, I think that a lot of guys, what they don't understand is that when you get Watson or Sharp in that match, there's not a better opportunity to listen, learn, and allow them to lead that so that you are being showcased. That's the difference between trying to force yourself to be seen versus allowing one of those two guys to make you look like you are $1 million just go with the dance. And I think that, you know, facing Watson in a match like that for your first time, man, that's like you can't get it any better than either Watson or Sharp, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, so you know what? But there's also going to be no excuses. You know, if you have a shit fest against Watson, I'm pretty sure it's going to be your fault and not his. So, right. You know, bring your A game. Hopefully, you know, generally people's first shows are the ones that are most attended by family and friends. Right. So, you know, we're hoping for a decent crowd. Johnny Royal is always, you know, selling a decent amount. Warren always sells a decent amount. But there's some others like Colin Muldoon. He ended up getting a booking in Northern California this weekend. So he was expected to be on the card, but you know I made the list of like, hey, these are the dates, and he told me he couldn't. I had him penciled in, but he had to remind me. So yeah. No Muldoon, as well as you know a few others that are out of town, you know, Jimmy Jack. So there's still some possibilities. I talked to a guy who I was very impressed with at Ground Zero, Luke Curtis, and he said he was going to go to the Crockett Cup for the NWA, right. And things just didn't work out. So he said he's going to be at the show. So right now, only got 7 matches. So if there's another opportunity, I like what I saw from him. And again, he wrestled Gregory Sharp. Right. He's way more experienced than the others. He came over from the East Coast to the New Japan Dojo and did some of the training there. So right. He's definitely a guy that I'm looking forward to maybe seeing on the main roster and seeing what he can do. So he might get an opportunity Saturday also.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned you did have a show in Let It Ride, because we mentioned Watson here and Bodie, and you know, you did mention Johnny Royal. Thoughts on what went down with that show? Boy, Johnny Royal also got an awakening going against the Monster.
Yeah, you know, Johnny Royal was the guy that, as a referee, he felt the wrath of Duke Lawrence. And I guess with some proper training, he was good with taking that opportunity, because we've seen him. He's a guy that, you know, he may not be ready, but he's going to give it 1,000%. There's not a guy in there other than, like I said, Daniel Ismael. These guys, you know, they're going to fight over who's going to get their ass kicked the worst. You know, they don't care. Yeah. They know to get better, they need as many matches as they can, and they will take a match against anybody. So you got to love the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
That sometimes you don't see from people that are just like, you know, I remember hearing conversations and they're in a match at Silverton and it might have been a pre-show. Oh, another scramble. Hey, motherfucker, you're lucky you're on the show, bro. It's a pre-show. I don't need to put 5 of you on there. I'm trying to give you guys an opportunity to work in front of a crowd. And if you guys shine, or a 6-man tag where you're only going to be in the match for a minute or two, make that minute or two yours. Make me want to use you more, you idiot. And they don't get it, a lot of people. But these two guys are like, what? Duke Lawrence? Yeah, sure. What? Going to bring back Killer Cross? Yeah, sure. I'll beat his ass. Well, you won't, but, you know, it's good to have that positive energy and you know, and believing in yourself. You know, there's a fine line between delusion and I guess, you know, confidence.
Confidence, right. Yep.
But, you know, everybody starts somewhere. You know, go watch Chris Bay's first match against Funny Bone. He got his fucking ass beat.
Yeah. He beat his ass so hard that he had to change his name.
That's right. He wasn't strong after that match.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, that I think that guys don't necessarily process because they're so young is the fact that that opportunity, that 5 to 7 minutes, you are getting a chance, especially at a casino show, too, you know, where you're getting to learn about listening to the crowd, you know. So you get a feel, you develop what it's like to feel that momentum, as opposed to just calling a match, you know, just going through the motions. And I think that that's, you know, something that is very important, because you're still in your head the first, you know, 100 matches or so in trying to process what's going on, how you're doing things. Any little bit, where even if you're in a six-man, you're on that apron, there are little things that you're learning how to do to tell that story and involve that crowd work. That's the only way you're going to get that is being in that situation. So instead of bitching about it, it's like, take advantage of every opportunity given to you, and then you won't have to worry about going...
You're really holding that thought.
Take advantage any way you can, you know?
You're still there?
Yeah, I'm still there. Can you got me?
Well, yeah, you kind of froze for a minute. I thought you were taking a very long pause.
Yeah, it was the dramatic pause of... But yeah, no, it's just that having that opportunity to learn that process and get a feel, that makes you a better performer, instead of just worrying about like, well, it should be a singles match. It's like, that's bullshit. Focus on learning from every opportunity you get when you're young and you grow. And then eventually you will become a Gregory Sharp, where, you know, guys are going to want to wrestle you and learn from you. And I think that's the biggest, you know, factor.
Yeah, no doubt. Like I said, you know, Sharp wrestled Luke Curtis at that show, and it was a really, really good match. And Evan Daniels, he's always bringing it. You know, him and Bodie was a real good match. I'll tell you what, man, big fan. I'm really enjoying the work of Transcendence, Bryce Saturn and Damian Desire. Excellent match with Lights, Camera, Faction. They've really established themselves as a top-tier tag team. They'll be here on the 31st. Not sure who they're going to work yet. You know, there's so much talent. We had the return of the Suavecitos taking on Mariachi Montaña. And, you know, the Mariachis continue to get a really good response from the crowd. And the Suavecitos, I'll be honest with you. This was my always issue with them for a long time was, for a tag team, they didn't do a lot of tag work.
Tag, yep.
They were more individuals working as a tag team. Even though they were getting love, I thought that they could do a lot more. And I remember they had a match with the Regulators. And the Regulators, who were trying to get back real soon, EJ Sparks had been hurt. And, you know, we're really trying to spruce up the tag division. You got Class and Reno still. Got a lot of good things going on. The Faction kind of together again. But the Suavecitos, I don't know if it's the tutelage of Chris Hero or getting out there and now listening to other people telling them the same thing that Joe and the crew used to tell them. But their work rate is way different.
Yeah.
You know, they utilize, you know, they're the experienced tag team now. They're the ones who cut off the ring. They're the ones who work together. So, you know, it was good to see that. You know, we always knew the potential was there, and sometimes stubbornness got in the way. And it was stubbornness on my part, because I had to deal with them sometimes and stubbornness on their part. So sometimes times away, you know, I was shocked. It was at the end of the day, you know, it's crazy. Danny talks to me more now than Ricky. Okay. And, you know, at the end of the night, Danny came up and he said, "Hey, I just want to say thanks for bringing us back. It was a great honor to be here again." And that actually meant something, you know, because it didn't need to be said. And I didn't look at it as back in the day, a lot of false bullshit. You know what I mean? I got that bullshit radar going. And I felt that he, because we had talked over 4-6 months about trying to get them. This was before they even came back, because they kind of infiltrated themselves. But before then, we were talking about things. So, you know, it's good to see that we have now the anniversary show coming up. We got new tag champs, and the question becomes, wow, the old tag champs, who were the young kids,
right?
They're banged up, so they're nowhere to be seen in there. So, you know, we can also announce on May 31st that Maserati will be wrestling Zamaya.
Nice.
After what happened at Let It Ride. Or maybe Ground Zero. It was one of them.
It was Ground Zero. Yeah.
Ground Zero. There you go.
Yeah.
So, and Gypsy Mac and number one contender Brittany Brooks will both be in the building on May 31st.
Nice.
And we're also going to be having some cash in the case qualifiers.
There we go.
So, you know, because we look at it this way, you know, we have the main event set scheduled to be Ice Williams challenging Danny Limelight. Limelight set out the challenge for a 30-minute Ironman match. You know, we got the Nick Bockwinkel Battle Royal. We got the cash in the case. We'll have a tag title match. We'll have a Nevada State title match. We got Brittany and Gypsy for the women's. And I don't know if I said the tag or Nevada State. No, no limits.
No limits.
So already at 7 matches. So there ain't a lot of room. Also, scheduled to appear, still figuring it out. Jay Vidal returns. Bateman will be there on the 31st. So, you know, these are guys vying. A guy like Jay Vidal, maybe he's in a cash in the case qualifier. Sure. Maybe Bateman's challenging for the No Limits. Who knows? There's a lot going on. And again, you know, you can pull up that flyer again. And, you know, the question becomes, who wants a piece of Duke Lawrence for the Nevada State Championship? And Gregory Sharp doesn't have a match scheduled, but he's only got 2 more shows. And as of right now, he's not scheduled for May 31st. So he's going to have to. And again, he don't have to go after the heavyweight championship.
Right.
He can find a partner and go for the tag belts. He could go after Duke. He could go after Dante King. So there's a lot of opportunities. So, you know, well, as we're billing it.
Technically, so does he have to cash in the case before the cash in the case match?
No, he doesn't. He has till the end of the show.
So theoretically,
he could enter the cash in the case and have 2.
So he could cash in the case on whoever wins the Iron Man match and is totally blown up. And then the cash in the case winner could cash in against Greg Sharp right after that.
Or Gregory Sharp could win the cash in the case, have 2, and cash in 2 more times the same day and become a dual champion. Never been done before.
I somewhere Greg right now is something's going off in his ears and he's going, no, No.
Or he could cash in and lose, crack the guy in the head with the other case because he's got two, and then cash in again and win.
Right.
So imagine that. You cash in and you end up losing a 30-minute match or something after that by cashing in. And then you cash in again and have another 30-minute match and finally win. And now we're out of the Silverton at 10:30 and they're trying to charge us extra for overtime.
Greg's gone. I just wrestled an hour and a half.
There you go. So it's possible.
Well, if there's one guy who could probably wrestle an hour and a half throughout the night, it's probably Greg, man.
Dude. Pretty sure. You know, he might have done that over two different time zones on the same day, you know.
Oh, shit. You know, it's, and I mean, it's interesting because, again, when you think of the position you're in, right, this is a pretty nice spot to be in where the, you know, the parts that you're lining up for the stories, you know, that you've kind of patterned out, you have options, you have different roads to go. You know, a lot of times you can book yourself into a corner by doing a cash in a case, and then, you know, you quickly blow that out and it's gone. But the last couple of years now, you know, it's come down to kind of last minute with that particular case, which I think is a nice thing because it allows that anticipation all year of when that can happen, as well as now just kind of leaving all those loose ends open for, you know, essentially almost like the old books where it was like choose your own adventure, right? It's like you get to choose your own adventure now.
I'll be honest. My favorite was when Graves cashed, won the cash in the case. And then that night they shocked the world where he teamed up with Hammerstone after they defeated Royce and Jarrell, but he did it. He turned on, I believe, Sepha.
Yeah.
And Hammerstone won the Nevada state title.
Yes.
And then they cashed in and won the tag titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my favorite one.
And
that came out of nowhere. Everybody was like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, no one saw it coming. And that's, I think that's, you know, again, that's the fun draw of, you know, being able to play with that notion of, you know, what are fans expecting versus, you know, what do I think will kind of leave it to that unpredictability where now fans are talking and now you kind of want to see what happens next. And that's, you know, that's the nice way to move it on to that, you know, getting fans in for the next show and seeing where the stories are going. So
I got another scenario for you. Ice Williams enters the cash in the case early, wins the cash in the case, loses the Iron Man match, cashes in, wins the title, Sharp cashes in, and he wins the title off Ice.
Yeah.
How crazy would that be?
But we find out Danny Limelight paid him for the briefcase so that technically Greg Sharp didn't win. It was Limelight's briefcase. So then Limelight cashes it in and Greg lays down. And now Limelight and Sharp are working together.
Limelight's champion. And then they go cash in the tag belts together.
Yeah.
See? I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the passing of Sabu this week. You know, I woke up and my kid was like, sent me a message. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. And again, I'm not going to say that that was one of the most shocking things I've heard, because, you know, Sabu wasn't in the best shape.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of issues. But I'm going to be the first to say, you know, I met him on a few different occasions, and he was always super nice.
Yep.
You know, I always tell the story. I told it a lot this week. And, you know, it was kind of like with Nick Gage telling me about proper ways to use light tubes. It was kind of like comical to me at first. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Nick Gage would tell me, you know, that there's too many fucking morons, obviously. And that's why they get fucked up, because they don't know what they're doing. And Sabu never told me nothing, but this was a few years back, because he lived in Vegas and he was friends with Sin. So he used to come in every once in a while. And for whatever reason, he decided to come in. He was in with Jeannie, Melissa at the time.
Melissa. Yeah.
And he was going over stuff. And all of a sudden, I started paying attention. And I was like, not understanding what he was doing. And he would have the chair. And he would have her specifically position things for him to do certain stuff. It would be set up there for him to use it to jump to the top rope to do a flip. He would use it to set up for the chair shot to somebody. And I was looking like, this motherfucker really has a rhyme and reason for everything that he does. You yeah. watch people with chairs and doors and tables, and it's just random bullshit craziness. And it's yep. like, this guy really had it as an art. It was an art form. Just watching him for 10 minutes specifically position, hey, you need to go here, you need to do this, and set up different scenarios yep. to do something. And now this is also, okay, he passed away at 60, so he had to be 56, 55. It couldn't have been more than 4 years ago, 3 years ago. And it was just like, wow, just the way he did that really brought a different observation to how he worked and right. did stuff. And, you know, it's funny the first time, because it's like, you know, Sin also knows Penn and Teller. And yeah. Teller's the one who don't talk, right?
Yeah. yeah. Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden he starts talking. Hey, thanks a lot for letting us use the place. And it's kind of like, kind of jarring to see. It's kind of like Sabu opening up or seeing him on Twitter. And it was good to see, because I see when he used to make a lot of Twitter posts and people would shit on him and fuck yeah. you and all this other stuff. But it was good to see that there was a lot of love for a guy who did do a lot for the business. Oh, and, yeah. you know, I'm not sure if that's the official word, but I heard he passed from a heart attack. I'm not sure. But a little insight, my son hit me up and told me that he has like hundreds of hours. There was an ad on Craigslist, shockingly, about a guy who was doing a documentary for Sabu. And it was, and Joey had to follow Sabu around for like a couple of weeks into WrestleMania. Yeah. So he yeah. was there, you know, he sent me some little clips and stuff. And before I heard it from Janela, when he posted about it, Joey's like, yeah, they didn't know if he was going to do the match. He wasn't even around. So there was a lot of chaos and craziness going on. You know, you just hope the guy found peace, you yeah. know, at the end, because, you know, I didn't see the match, but I saw some of the clips, and man, he definitely took a beating at that yeah. show. And,
yeah.
you know, I think it's also crazy for, you know, people to be blaming GCW for his death. It's like, come on, people. You know, everybody wants to have a story. You know, at the end of the day, Sabu decided, yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I'm going to take the payday. And he wanted to go out one last time. And it was a packed house for him, you know. And I'll be honest with you, it's a guy like Ric Flair. It makes me think that these guys would prefer to pass in the ring.
Well, and it's they literally had the Dark Side of the Ring, the Sheik documentary, just this past Tuesday. And one of the things that RVD said was that, you know, the way the Sheik was, that was his mentality. Like, the Sheik would have been perfectly happy to have died in the ring. And what's interesting, too, is Sabu in that he found out about his uncle's death while he was, I believe, in Japan. And he found out because Goldberg, who he didn't know very well, said something to the extent of, sorry about your uncle. And he thought he meant because his uncle was in the hospital. And he said, no, you know, he passed away. And so when he got a hold of his aunt, the Sheik's wife said, well, I didn't tell you because Sheik would have wanted you to go out there and do your job. He would have wanted you to wrestle and not, you know, take that night off because of him passing. So it's just that mentality that he got from his uncle that is, you know, that carried through. And, you know, the whole idea of him working with a chair, you know, is again reflective of the way that, you know, the Sheik taught him. And it's funny because it's, again, thinking about this is now, we're at the generation now that isn't learning like that anymore, you know, where it was all kayfabe and it was taken very seriously. So will we see people who bring what Sabu brought to the ring in the future, or are we going to continue to see a lot of cookie cutter stuff, you know?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. I think that is. It's like there's a lot of reasonings for it. You know, it was, you know, when I grew up, there wasn't NXT. There wasn't, you know, the minor leagues type stuff. It was right. When I first heard of Macho Man Randy Savage, it was when he showed up in WWF. And it's like, oh, I love this guy. And right. It was like, who knew that this guy had been cutting his teeth in Mid-South for 10 years or whatever? DiBiase. All these guys were established stars in regional areas. Now, there's none of that. You know, everybody's coming up through a system. It could be the indie system, could be the NXT system, could be TNA. But everybody is kind of known in a way to where it's crazy that Randy Savage or Ted DiBiase would wrestle in front of 18,000 people in Kansas City, Missouri, but being a WWF kid, didn't even know it fucking existed.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you can go on the internet and go fucking find Brian Cage working at a backyard show 15 years ago. You know what I mean? It's like everybody, there's no hiding anybody anymore.
Right. And speaking of there, I just saw a random post this morning from some wrestling page showing a picture of the Mortis costume that Canyon wore in some house shows of WWE that Canyon passed on to Brian. And Brian wore
I saw that a few months back. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, guys like Brian sought out the guys who really influenced them. And those guys who were, you know, who are good guys like that, they, you know, they took the time to encourage a young Brian Cage and work with him and make him, you know, hungrier and better. And I think that, you know, that's also something that, you know, kids gotta continue to do that, man. Seek out the people who have done it and look at those heroes and then try to, you know, pick their brains and get better, because that's where the opportunity is to learn from the past.
Yeah, but being in it every day, watching it, and it's like, you know, guys like a Kenny and a Sin who've been around for 25 years, TJP, that come around the school, D'Lo, and it's like, the problem is they are being taught that, the younger guys, but they're not paying attention to it. Yeah. They're only looking at their journey, which is very important. Don't get me wrong. Right. But nobody seems to care about who helped make it possible for you to get there. You know, there's always going to be guys like Cross and a guy like Richard Holiday, and I say a Hammerstone, that the past means a lot to them. But as each year passes, none of these guys are aware of, let alone the Hart Foundation, you right. know, yep. or the British Bulldogs. It's like, yep. you know, to them, old school is fucking the New Day or the Usos.
Oh, man.
I remember my first show, and it was like, your first show? I'm like, I was watching Bruno Sammartino and Stan Hansen on closed circuit in like 1975 because Long Island got cable when I was like 10 or 11, and I got to watch the worst thing ever, which was Antonio Inoki versus Muhammad Ali.
Right.
But they had a show from Shea Stadium, and it was Bruno Sammartino back from the broken neck, which back in the day, Bruno legit broke his neck, and they still didn't put the belt on Stan Hansen.
Right.
And yep. Bruno held the belt for like 11 months without actually wrestling ever because he was in the hospital, and he had a broken neck. And his first match back. And then I remember they had Andre the Giant fought Chuck Wepner, who was a boxer right. that many people say the Rocky movie was based on. And Andre destroyed him. But it was just amazing how wrestling was then. And it's like now, you know, it was cool when you'd go on a radio, you'd be listening to a radio station that had like a, I remember in New York, like at midnight on a Saturday, Jody McDonald, and he would have like the wrestling scoops and knowing shit because there was no internet and you yeah. couldn't find out. Now it's like, wow, I could go on Twitter and Triple H will explain to me the whole basis around John Cena's heel turn.
Right. Yeah.
And talking to The Rock and getting it past and all this other stuff. So we are long past it. And as much as people want to believe that it isn't, it is. But the fact of the matter is fans still want to believe.
Right.
So you can convince them that Seth Rollins and CM Punk fucking hate each other, or Drew McIntyre.
Yeah.
Because people want to believe it. It's like deep down, you know, it's all a fucking work.
Yeah.
We all know it. But there's that little tinge that makes you want to believe, you know what? I think he took a liberty on it. I think yeah. he said, fuck it. Nothing's going to happen to Drew McIntyre. He's going to fuck them up. And that's what people want to believe. And, man, if you could do that as a wrestler, man, sky's the limit. Yeah. You know, go watch wrestling. Go watch the indies. Go watch anything. You know, go look at our guys. You know, go look at a Danny Limelight, who people respect, but more people, unless you like the heels. I grew up, I loved the heels. So it didn't matter. I loved Macho Man. I loved the Hart Foundation as heels. I loved Rick Rude. You know, all my favorite wrestlers. I hated Hulk Hogan. And maybe I knew something that other people found out. I don't know. But I hated Hogan. I hated Bob Backlund. You know, Bruno was all right, but I loved Stan Hansen. Right. And I was always the heel guy. And even to this day, and it's like, because especially in the indies, a good heel's tough to come by.
Yeah.
Because you know, your paydays aren't the greatest. You need to try to sell those t-shirts. You got to be friendly to the fans. And it's a totally different than back in the day where a heel wouldn't go out at intermission and try to sell a t-shirt.
Right.
You know, now is Karrion Kross a babyface or is he a heel? Well, either he has the number one or the number three. Either way, even if he has the number nine in the position he is mind-boggling. The guy's on for 30 seconds a week.
And you saw that post they did yesterday where now they're going to start selling his shirts at the event.
Oh, I did not know this.
Yeah, because fans would come up to him and say, hey, where could I get your shirt? And he was like, well, you have to go to ShopZone. They're like, no, I want to get it now. And so he brought that to the attention of the WWE, and they picked up on it. And starting on Monday, they'll be selling the shirts at Raw. And
well, I'll tell you what, that's where the most money is made. You know, I worked with the Godfather for many years, and he used to talk about how, you know, there would be three Austin shirts and two Rock shirts and this. And when all of a sudden they had the marijuana stuff, and he said he weighed so much, he made more money than his guarantee just from selling shirts because it got to be in the venue at every Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and paper.
And Kevin made a great point about it, I guess, when he was pitching the reasoning behind it. And that is, you go to a concert, yeah, you can get a band shirt somewhere else, but you want that as part of that memory there, right in the moment, so that, you know, you look back and you have that shirt with you, and you, yeah, man, when I saw them.
Well,
yeah.
there is one difference. When you go see a band, there's not 52 bands performing that night.
Sure.
Like on Monday Night Raw. You know, how many shirts are they going to bring? You know, I don't know.
He's in the position that he's justified because of the way that his shirts are already selling.
Well, yeah. And again, you know, they'll see if it sells accordingly, great. If not, it ain't going to be there next week. You know, it's like,
but even,
no offense.
He even said the books, his autographed books sold out. So they let the publishers know, and he just got a huge, amount sent to him that he started signing again. So it's a phenomenon that's happening.
He needs to send me a couple of books. That way, when I see where I am in it, I'll also autograph it for an extra 10 bones. You know, I'll autograph the pages that I'm on.
So multiple autographs or probably.
Yeah, but I'll do like, you know, 10 bucks, but I'll do like, you know, 12 for 100. You know what I mean? Like, I'll give you a discount if you want multiple pages.
Right. But, Joe, what if you're only on like two pages?
Well, then obviously it was a misprint and it has to go back to the publisher.
I see you reading the book and going, you know, it starts off, you know, when I was growing up, and you're like, where's my name?
Right. Well, yeah, anytime I hear him mention it, he's like, yeah, when I was training in Vegas, FSW, motherfucker, say FSW. Man.
Oh, man.
I didn't get the Remy rub. I didn't get the Remy rub like he got the interview in the documentary.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
I was in town. Yeah. I live here. How come he didn't ask me to meet him at the hotel for brunch? Where was my shrimp cocktail?
You know, Remy posted a couple of photos of him with a shovel out in the desert. And did you see those photos? I think it was just the other day.
No.
He was wearing this button-down Hawaiian shirt, I think with like a toucan on it. I was hoping that the reason he was out there was to bury that shirt, because it was an eyesore shirt, man.
Are we sure it wasn't from the past when him and Manly and Kevin kind of joined together as the 86ers?
Oh man,
I remember they did something where they closed somebody into the trunk of a car and drove them to the desert with the shovels. That might have been when they beheaded Saiku, for all I remember.
Did he ever recover from the beheading?
Yeah, he did work, I think, at that one place, Miller's Ale House, for a while.
Oh, jeez.
He resurfaced there.
Miller's Ale House. All right, so we got Future Shock coming up here on Saturday at 5 o'clock at the FSW Arena. Again, you can see it on Triller if you're not in town or not able to make it out there.
All tickets, just $20. If you get there early, you can get it in the front row. You can sit wherever you want.
There we go. That's not bad at all. And you're going to see the Future Legends Championship defended by Bodie, which I'm pretty sure then this is Bodie's first match being 18.
I believe it is. Yeah. Also, I believe that we actually signed a new deal with TitleMatchNetwork.com, and they're going to be airing a lot of our past shows. Ed from Poder, he had hit me up and told me about these guys, and so I hit him up, and they were more than welcome. So they were interested in the Future Legend Women's Championship match. I just uploaded the Benefit for Bay, the Best of Zoe Stark, the Best of Cross. I'm finding the Best of Sepha. So a lot of our big-time stuff is all going to be aired on that network also.
Nice. That's great. And, you know, again, if you're just coming across us now and you've never seen some of the, the history of FSW and what's out there, you definitely have to check it out and see the journey of these guys.
I thought we had done one, but we haven't. So I'm putting together the Best of LA Knight in FSW. A guy who was a two-time FSW heavyweight champion, an elite champion for us. You know, he wrestled some of the best of the best. He's wrestled Kenny King. He wrestled Roderick Strong. Yeah. He wrestled Cross. They had numerous matches. Hammerstone. Never ran into Solo Sikoa. They missed paths
right in
FSW.
Right. Yep. Did you ever have him wrestle Brian? Did Cage?
I'm pretty sure they must have, because the reason I brought in LA Knight was I was already using Cage, and Ricker hit me up in the email because they were in the tag team together.
Right.
So I know they teamed early on. Pretty sure they wrestled like Gatson and somebody, Jody Christofferson back in the day.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering now if Sean Ricker, LA Knight ever wrestled Brian Cage in FSW. Interesting. Gonna have to look that up.
Yeah. And maybe that's something you'll have to book down the line.
Cage and Cross wrestled numerous times.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah, because I can't recall it. And if any fans out there, you know, maybe remember them wrestling, that'd be great to hear about.
You know, it's possible that maybe they wrestled like in a four-way match together.
Right, right. But a 1-on-1, I don't think they ever did.
Yeah. That might not have been. They were on two different trajectories at the time. So
right. Right.
You know, Cage was involved with like Hardy and Lance Hoyt. He wrestled and Cross. Right. And because LA Knight left for a long time because he got signed, went to TNA, and he was our champion. But they were all around the champions around the same time. So
yeah,
interesting.
Again, the Sweet 16 anniversary show coming up on Sunday, June 15th at 5 p.m. from the Silverton. Again, the big headliner there is going to be Danny Limelight defending the FSW heavyweight title against Ice Williams in an Ironman match, a 30-minute Ironman match.
You know, what we're going to do is we're going to have family four packs starting at $16 per ticket, and then we're going to basically make it, you know, we got to charge the fees. So we'll cap the fees at $20, so it'll be $80 for a family four-pack, but the tickets will be $16 each.
So, you know, and in the end, it's $20 a ticket, you know, including the fees. That's perfect. So there you go. Any final thoughts as we wrap up this week, Joe?
Yeah, you know, just staying busy, busy, busy. You know, we got three shows in May. We got another one May 31st, and then we follow up with the anniversary show June 15th. You know, always talking with other companies about putting together, you know, after Mania, you know, maybe a few months down the road. Also talking about doing a WWE, another ID show down the line, maybe by the new year. So, you know, we got a lot of things happening. So, you know, follow us everywhere. You know, check us on the Facebook and the Instagram and Twitter and all the good stuff. And, you know, check out some of the best of the best. We're not only bringing back some of our best wrestlers, we also have a lot of them that are still on the roster. So, you know, you're going to get your bang for the buck. There's no better value for wrestling shows, you know, all over the West Coast. You know, we're getting a lot of accolades, a lot of people, you know, wanting to come to FSW. So, you know, you never know who's going to show up next.
Yeah. And like you said, Future Shock, you'll see Fallon Gray, who, like I said, I'm very, very high on. She's really good. So, again, shout out to Chris Bay for bringing her to your attention. That's awesome.
Yes. And that's what, and that's the fortunate thing, having so many talented people that when they're out, it's almost like unpaid scouts. I got intern scouts that go out there and say, hey, I talked to this one. You know, Maz is big with that, with the women wrestlers. Like, hey, you know, I guess she's doing the power slap. And now I've gotten a few messages from people that are wrestlers that are willing to get themselves here for an opportunity because, hey, they're trying to get to Vegas for power slap. So they're trying to get that double booking going.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Power Slap is getting a lot of attention. So, you know, it'd be great to see some of those guys come on over and get a chance to roll around in the FSW ring.
There you go. We can have FSW presents the Power Slap edition. Only people on Power Slap get to be on the wrestling show.
And, you know, in a little bit here at noon, I'm going live with something that's going on in Vegas here to give a little promotion to, because you brought up slapping. We're going to be promoting the Booty Slap Championship going on May 24th.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. There we go. So, you know, you think Glenn King's going to that one, Joe?
Oh, he bought up the whole front row, I heard.
So, again, lots of stuff going on. You know, stay dialed in and follow the Future Stars of Wrestling. Looking forward to this Saturday show. And man, it's goes by quick. We're almost half the year through. So, you know, before you know it, you're going to be doing the New Year's Eve show.
Time flies, man. Enjoy it while you can.
Exactly. Well, everybody, until next time, we'll see you guys.